Thanks for listening on Monday, July 23rd, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Happy to talk about training at your agency. Budget time is upon us. Agencies are putting together their 2014 budget plans and requests. And one of the items that the old saying goes that seems to disappear in tough budget times, travel is one and training is two. And we'll address two on the conversation on the program today. Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA is former director of HR operations at Transportation Security Administration at DHS and also a veteran of the Office of Personnel Management. My guest in studio today, Linda, it's a pleasure to see you. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Why do you think that is, that old saying that I alluded to? Because I hear it over and over and over again from folks both in HR operations and out of HR operations that when times get tight, those are the things that go away fast.
Training is out there as a big fat pot of money in most agencies, and it's really not as well defended, and it's just sitting out there with a lot of folks in the decision-making chairs not seeing the importance of retaining those training dollars.
One of the things that I think is interesting about this topic is every person that I talk to of whatever theoretical stripe, whatever agency, whether they're in government now or formerly in government, this is one of the few issues. Every single person I talk to agrees that training budgets are ripe to be cut and shouldn't be. And so I wonder why what you're saying is true because it is. We see it time after time when budget times get tight. Training dollars go away. Why is that defense issue such an issue, do you think?
We really have not done the job in looking at training dollars the way we should. As HR professionals, as training officials, as executives making decisions, we look at the non-technical training. What I mean by that is if you're hiring an engineer as a trainee, you expect that you're going to do some kind of on-the-job or additional continuing education for them, and you plan for that. You budget for that. You expect that to happen. So engineers get trained to be better engineers, contracting specialists, and so on and so forth. But we don't think so much about all of those different kinds of knowledges and skills and abilities and competencies that made us hire somebody in the first place that makes us decide they're a great performer or a mediocre performer and how we can devote training money to get them to be the best that they can possibly be in their fields. We don't do that. We haven't really thought that way. So all the dollars that go for great training in, you know, human relations, communication, time management, analysis and problem solving, presentation skills, negotiating, teamwork, all those kinds of things that really can make a person phenomenal and make the organization extremely high performing are sort of those intangibles we don't think about. And we get so caught up in all the day-to-day crises of doing our jobs, we don't sit back and think and plan about, oh, hey, if we don't have money for this, what does that mean? If my great engineer can't communicate to contractors how to best do a job, they can't do it in oral communication, they can't do it in written communication, their negotiation style, if you will, is, you know, do as I say or else, and they don't understand how to get agreement and collaboration and how to find better ways perhaps to get the job done in a more cost-effective, they don't understand those things, which all of which training can help them do, you're not going to be a successful as an individual employee. You're not going to get the most out of that person if you're their manager. If you are at the executive level, you're not going to see your organization achieve all of its goals. So training is so important to make that happen, but we often forget it in the rush of, ooh, here's a lot of dollars. Gee, do we need time management training? Gee, do we need teamwork simulations? Do we need that? And a lot of people, no, it's not that important. But it truly is. We pay the price every time we've had significant budget cuts. If you look back in the 80s, 90s, and you see the kinds of slashing of training budgets that were made, and you look at what's happened in agencies since, in trying to pick back up on those kinds of skills, whether they're individual performance skills, whether they're management level skills, how to best be a coach and a mentor and not just dictate as too many supervisors tend to do. You can really look back to a lack of real training dollars. Similarly, some occupations have suffered because they're the softer support occupations, whether it's human resources, budget, all those things that support an organization. We've let some of their technical training fall as well because, again, they're more intangible to show those direct impacts. You can take your trainee engineer and say, here's what this individual knew when they started with us fresh out of college. Here's what they can now do. And you can see technically their advancement. We don't spend the time and effort to look at those right measures to be able to make our cases. So the training dollars are sitting there. The decision maker, whether it's the CFO or somebody above them within the organization, says, hey, I've got to cut X percentage of funds because we're not going to get all that from Congress. It's not going to happen. Gee, here's this big fat wad of money for training. I don't really see anything we're gaining from it, certainly not short term. We'll worry about it later, /. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens.
You're really getting right to the crux of what I took away from you've written a terrific piece that we're going to post on federalnewsradio.com called Salvaging Training in a Tight Budget Environment. And the two words that popped into my mind, and you've used them both in the remarks that you just made, one of them is tangible. Mm-hmm. So many of the things that people are telling me in agencies that they want to be able to train their employees for are things like you're talking about, soft skills. I hear customer service a lot, just mm-hmm. as citizens become more discerning about what they expect. You know, they want to call a call center and get the same kind of treatment they get when they call Macy's or whoever it is. So those are the kinds of things I hear all the time. The other term that you used is the word measure in various forms. And it strikes me that a lot of these things, because they're intangible, are exceptionally difficult to measure and thereby show a return on investment to the financial team at an agency.
Right. They are hard to measure, but we've let that become sort of a bugaboo. If you think about it, you can measure just about anything. I mean, my heavens. You know, we draw correlations for, you know, the depth of the green in the trees on a rainy day compared to a sunny day. And I'm not trying to be facetious, and I'm sure there's great scientific things there. But why can't we measure people's effectiveness after that, I'll call the soft skill kind of training, just as well as we can do with the more direct technical training? There's no reason we cannot, except we haven't been forced to do it. We haven't been rewarded to do it. It's hard for one person to sort of be the champion within the agency to start that. It really does take a number of people to cooperate together to get that. And I definitely want to explore during our time today some of the different ways of gathering those measures and some of the sorts of things that I think can very effectively be measured.
I'd be happy to do that. One of the things that I think is necessary, though, is incentive. And I wonder now if, given the budget pressures that we're under, maybe there is more incentive for somebody in a leadership role to sit down and say, you know what, maybe I don't have time to do this, but I better make time if I want to defend this budget request that I'm going to make and do whatever I can do to try to demonstrate a return on investment.
I absolutely agree. I think the time is perfect right now to begin to do that. If we don't begin doing this now, when is the next time for us to do it? Every year can go by, and in the meantime, we fall farther and farther behind in really achieving our missions and doing them as well and as cost-effectively as the public demands.
You have, you're using terms that I think go right to the heart of the issue. When we talk about the mission of an agency, it doesn't rely just on a number of bodies. It requires a certain set of skills, and it requires certain brain power to be able to execute. And I wonder if that's not a piece of what has to go into this defense of training budgets.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we forget the connection. When we go about our jobs in hiring quality folks to come to work for us, we're looking not just at their technical knowledges, their technical skills. We look at how do they interact, those interpersonal dimensions. What seems to be their ability in decision-making and in problem-solving and in negotiating and in teamwork and all the oral communication skills. We look at all of those factors. We often put them in our vacancy announcements. So those are those critical competencies we're looking for. And then we forget all about them once they come on board, and we don't look to enhance those abilities to make them the very best employee they can make. In my view, if you've got great employees who can be the best they can be, your mission is going to be performed as best as it possibly can be. You're going to satisfy the public. So we lose that connection, and we can't lose it. We've really cut money away from our ability to do those things. And we've got to begin to make that case that if we can hire them for these reasons, and we want to retain those who have those great skills for those reasons, why don't we train to get more and more people to the level we need them to be at in all of those kinds of competency areas?
There's a school of thought that I'm surprised at how often I see it when it comes to retention, and we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. My guest on In Depth with Francis Rose today is Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA, a veteran of government human resources, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Are you or someone you know an unemployed veteran? The Veterans Retraining Assistance Program, VRAP, may provide eligible unemployed veterans ages 35 to 60 with up to 12 months of training or education assistance toward a career in a high-demand field. VRAP is available to the first 99,000 eligible veterans. Don't miss out on this limited opportunity. To learn more about eligibility and to apply for VRAP, please visit benefits.va.gov/vow. That's benefits.va.gov/vow.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Members of Congress don't know more than the rest of us, but they have a secret weapon, the Congressional Research Service. I'm Emily Kopp. On Monday's Federal Drive, there's a new push to make public those CRS reports. And we'll look at Treasury's struggle to figure out government spending with the department's Dick Gregg. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest today is Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA. And I told you before the break, Linda, that I hear from time to time, more often than I think I should, one particular school of thought about training when it comes to retention in government. I hear people say, if I give my people the kind of training that they want or the kind of thing that you're talking about, they're going to be very valuable to somebody else and they're going to go away. And that strikes me as terribly, terribly short-sighted. Am I right on that?
I absolutely agree with you. I do think it's short-sighted. First of all, if you don't give people the opportunities to learn and grow with you, they're going to leave anyway. So maybe you have them in your organization working directly for you until they find that other job. And certainly here in D.C., it's pretty easy to move from one agency to another. A little harder out in the field because it's not quite as many jobs, but nonetheless, it's doable and people will do it or they'll leave government altogether. So you really can't hold somebody back by denying growth opportunities. It's really not wise. It doesn't give you the best employee. It gets them very quickly demotivated and beginning to look for something else because most folks come into government with the notion of wanting to grow and learn and be able to contribute to the missions that support the citizenry of the country. If they don't feel they can do that with you, they're going to leave. So denying those opportunities to an individual to keep them close to you is a very short-term way of thinking and not ultimately successful. People just won't stay if you do that.
We see that in survey after survey after survey that people don't work for the government. They like the pay, they like the benefits, they like the other things that go along with it, but those aren't the reasons that they do it.
Exactly.
Initially.
Exactly.
They have the mission in mind.
Right. Almost every survey, whether it's of you know, recent graduates, those who are contemplating schools of public administration, whether it's new employees, they all have a feeling of a commitment to serve, a contribution to make to the country. And sometimes, unfortunately, we turn that away through training and other, you know, bad policies that we don't, or policies we have that are great that we don't implement well. And they leave. Unfortunately, a lot of folks, there's heavy, heavy turnover in most agencies in the first year of employment. I think the recent Partnership for Public Service study said about 35-40%, which is really a sad commentary. Some of it is training related, no question. And we really need to turn that around. And in my view, again, if we work hard to look for the right ways to train and develop our people, and we look for the best ways to train and develop our managers so they can interact effectively with these folks, we're going to have a much better retention rate of people we spend an awful lot of time and money trying to hire. You know, we don't hire everybody who applies to us. We're very selective in the federal sector. So why do we not then keep that thinking going? I used to always say, and my staff used to get tired of my hearing it, but the most important job I think any manager has is to constantly re-recruit their employees. And I really believe that. I think that's what we need to do. And part of that is to focus on how do we best train and develop them. One individual manager can't change the whole training budget, can't make everything different. But if the agency as an agency commits to spending the money they need to spend to keep people growing and developing in all of the different myriad skills and abilities and competencies we need for them to be highly successful, the agency can't help but benefit itself to be highly successful. Go ahead, Francis.
We talked about some of the things that the challenges that managers have in the first segment. One of the things that you mentioned, and I want to explore it a little bit more, is the idea of measuring things that are not easy to measure. Life is hard.
Yes.
We have to do things that are tough.
Right.
Measuring things, a couple of them that I wrote down that you mentioned, negotiation skills, presentation mm-hmm. skills. Some of these things are not easy to measure beginning versus end.
Right.
I've talked to a number of folks in industry who provide training services mm-hmm. to the federal government, and they have told me that it is becoming easier for them to develop these measures. So that it's not just they show up and give the mm-hmm. training and that's the end of it. They're able to build into these assessments at the beginning and assessments at the end so that, I mean, they're doing it for their own good. Let's not be too altruistic about it. But the fact of the matter is they can figure it out. And so I'm curious as to why maybe it's taken agencies a little bit longer to pick up on that.
I think, again, because it is intangible, there's no one surefire way that does that that fits every agency. All of the different training vendors, graduate school, USA included, you know, have measures and can do assessments, and they can tailor them and customize them. But without the agency stopping to think about what makes the most sense for that agency – You know, they're great numbers. I'm not putting that down at all because it's certainly better than nothing. But all too often, the agency hasn't thought through, all right, if I want somebody to be a better negotiator, how do I know if that's happened? How do I define success as a better negotiator or a better information provider to various stakeholders or a persuader to stakeholders or whatever it may happen to be for that agency's mission? How do they define success? We also often have the tools in the agencies, but, for example, the HR person or the training official doesn't have it, he or herself. Him or herself. They need to work with managers. They need to work with others to say, all right, what is that performance success? Some of our performance plans actually are good and actually do have right in them the kinds of measures we want to see, that we want people who have successfully persuaded stakeholders to adopt a new regulation that Congress is pushing the agency to do and the stakeholders don't like it for various reasons. Those sorts of things we can build in, that after somebody's had great training in how to best provide information, how to be persuasive, how to point out advantages, how to openly discuss disadvantages, to, you know, point the way, how to do good analysis, how to provide the right kinds of information in the right kind of ways. All those things that have training solutions as the way to get them, people can then do a better job. And you can say, ah, gee, for the first time in 5 years, look at this. Our stakeholders came to an agreement because, you know, John Smith here did a great job in presenting this after we gave them the training. So you have to build up front, what is it you want to look at for success?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you then look at those? Now, some agencies, because of what their missions are and some of their work, they have a lot of measures already. Again, usually HR and training folks don't have the managers do, that track speed, numbers of errors, rework issues, complaints, cost, you know, all kinds of quality factors. A lot of agencies have those as part of their normal performance tracking. Why not marry that up with, again, I'll call them training interventions, because I want to make it clear, too, I'm not talking about necessarily just traditional style classroom training. There's all kinds of things we can do with modern technology. We can do all sorts of things that are online-based. We can do very much more with structured, systematic kinds of on-the-job training, as opposed to I, as a manager, train somebody this way, somebody else as a manager, train somebody that way. We can really pull all that together in very, very reasonable, cost-effective packages that get people that kind of training. We look at, all right, we spent, I'm going to make this up, $10,000 to train 10 people, and oh my gosh, we have saved the agency $200,000 in terms of lack of rework, lack of complaints, you know, better quality, better reception from Congress, you know, blah, 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 whatever the issues are. Whoa, there's a return on investment right there. How do you can't argue with those dollars.
That's right.
Go ahead, Francis.
Well, that's where you start to tell a CFO a story,
exactly,
to say this is why you can't cut this line.
That's right. You get 20 times your investment. Hey, that's good in any market.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to do those sorts of things. But it takes us time to do it. We've got to sit down and we've got to team together. It's got to be the training folks and the HR folks and the managers to look at this in a teaming method to say, what are our indicators of success? How do we know we've accomplished something better with this person, with this part of the organization? How do we see that? We all know, we've all got horror stories of people who, you know, can't write their way out of a paper bag, and every organization has to do, you know, congressional responses and other inquiries. Well, if they can't write their way out of a paper bag, you're going to go around and around and around and spend umpteen weeks to respond to a congressperson when you really want to get back to them very, very quickly. If you've got people well trained in writing and they can organize their thoughts well and they can put them down coherently and using good grammar and punctuation, well, isn't that worth that investment? I would say yes, even something as simple as that. But we don't stop and grab that and characterize it. One of the things I think, and I'm sure they'd be happy to share because they are with most things, the Department of Defense with the active military, I think, is the model we really need to start following. When they bring somebody in as a new recruit, as an active military member, they don't just think of the money they're going to pay them in salary, the benefits they're going to give them. They factor in all the training costs. And it's not just how to best, if they're in the infantry, you know, aim weapons and fire at the right targets and all that. But they also work with them on those softer skills. What do they need to do in that role? And for every kind of role and responsibility there is in active military, there's a whole set of training that people have to go through, and they put the money behind it. So they don't look at a recruit to say, oh, they're going to cost us $10,000 as a private. They're going to say they're going to cost us the $10,000 for salary benefits, but they're also going to cost us another $5,000, whatever it happens to be, for training, and the training is going to consist of da-da-da-da-da. You know, when you go to boot camp, it's not simply, you know, running around with a rifle over your head. You know, you're learning to take orders. You're learning to make decisions. You're learning to look out for your team, you know, so on and so forth. All those kinds of things get built in.
There's another cost there that I want to explore when we come back from the break that DOD factors into their training that I want to see if we're on the right track and see if there's a potential applicable model in civilian agencies when we come back. My guest is Linda Peterson from Graduate School USA on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Her essay titled Salvaging Training in a Tight Budget Environment will be posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and our conversation continues in just a moment.
I'm Ronnie Mervis. Attention all golfers. Swing that club for a chance to win $1 million at the Mervis Diamond Million Dollar Invitational. Join me for a fabulous day of golf on Wednesday, September 12th at Whiskey Creek in Frederick, Maryland, designed by Ernie Els. You could walk away with a cool $1 million prize or win a Mervis Diamond, Tacori Fashion Jewelry, or a trip to South Africa, courtesy of South African Airways, and more. Won't she just love you for that? Everyone will be at this prestige event. Play golf with your best clients or just bring your buddies for a fun day and great networking. The entry fee includes breakfast, dinner, and awards reception. Proceeds go to Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Awareness. Your mother, wife, girlfriend, sister, and daughter will thank you for your support of a worthy cause. Ladies, send your men to play. Don't delay. Get in while you can. Corporate sponsors and their guests are welcome. I can see you sinking those putts at the Million Dollar Invitational on September 12th. Register today at MervisDiamond.com/golf. Again, that's MervisDiamond.com/golf.
And I can just read on the plane without any problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because a Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, David Adelman, founder and CEO of Real Tributes, the premier producer of personal history films. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a law firm located in Fairfax, moving to Reston. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Lower weight, lower estrogen. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, higher levels of the female hormone estrogen can raise the risk of breast cancer because estrogen can spur the growth of some forms of tumors. But a study also indicates an estrogen-lowering benefit from weight control. At Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, Ann McTiernan looked at data on 439 healthy, overweight or obese postmenopausal women. Some did moderate exercise. Others dieted moderately, exercised and dieted, or did nothing. McTiernan looked at their estrogen levels.
We found the greatest effect in the group that had both diet and exercise, and we think that's because they lost the most weight.
The study in the Journal of Clinical Oncology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Salvaging Training in a Tight Budget Environment is an essay by my guest on the program today. Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA has experience at the Office of Personnel Management and is a former director of HR operations at the Transportation Security Administration. And I'm underselling your OPM experience. It's not like you worked there for like 10 minutes.
No, exactly.
You had a distinguished career there at a number of different places around the country.
Yes.
On a personal note, you mentioned before we went on the air that you worked, I believe you said, in L.A. And San Francisco and Chicago as an OPM official at each of them before you came to Washington.
Yes.
What is it that people in Washington should know about how the government works outside the Beltway that they don't either know or think about often enough?
The primary difference is in outside of Washington, the government is just not the big game in town. Virtually every other location, is just not a federal town the way D.C. is. Here, everybody either is federal, knows somebody who's federal, supports the federal government as a contractor, has some linkage. Not so in any of those locations. So you have a different fight for talent. The people's jobs are actually different. I don't want to say which is better or which is worse, but in the field locations, it's much more the direct front line with whatever the customer base is for the agency mission. So it's very different, and cuts, whether it's to training or to anything else, hit already somewhat smaller resources out there. So to some extent, they're felt even more intensely, and there aren't as many avenues for agencies to share. There's some through federal executive boards and other entities that exist out there that don't hear in the town. But it is a different world, and the people out there are sort of starving for, you know, more resources of every kind, whether it be training or something else, because they're sort of out there doing, and the folks here are, you know, planning and doing policies and deciding the course of how missions get accomplished. And it's easy sometimes to forget that you've got these individual employees and their managers and that whole chain out there in the field, you know, doing a very direct interaction with a customer, also often very much on a shoestring budget in every possible way. So these kinds of decisions and cutting development hurt them in some ways even more than they hurt folks right here in town.
And before we get back to our regularly scheduled conversation about training already in progress, turn that around. What is it, now that you've had time here in Washington, what is it that folks in the field, maybe misconceptions that they have, ways that they think about how Washington works that maybe they could stand to change a little bit?
I think most of the field folks don't understand how difficult it is to operate here. It's not simply, let's have a policy today on something. So much goes into it, and I think a lot of the folks in the field don't see the full big picture of all of the different stakeholders, all of the different ramifications. Their world is somewhat constrained, and it's very easy to point a finger and say, they in headquarters don't do this, didn't think of that. Well, they in headquarters are forced to think of so many things. It takes longer to get decisions made than folks in the field, because you're really dealing with a different environment and a much bigger set of issues and considerations here in D.C.
We were talking about training in our last segment, and you mentioned the Department of Defense and the concept that they have of the total cost of a person, whether it's a uniformed recruit or a civilian personnel. Something else that
Let me back you up, Francis. On the civilian personnel side, they're not quite as effective.
They don't
follow their own model as well with the civilian side. So I don't want anybody to think that Department of Defense has it knocked on the civilian side.
Okay.
They do for the military members, but something breaks down when you look at the civilian workforce. So they need to do a better job with that just as much as the non-DOD agencies have to do.
That's interesting, because they have that that base of knowledge right in front of them.
One would wonder. Again, it gets down to the whole, it's so hard.
Uh-huh.
And it's so, you know, DOD has a long history of doing this on the active military side. You know, it's really a new nut to crack for everybody to do this on the civilian workforce, regardless of what the department is.
Is that really what it boils down to? Is it just a totally new way of thinking about how this is going to work?
I really do believe it is. People have talked about this for a while. Mm-hmm. In my view, you know, act now or give it up. Mm-hmm. Because budgets for the next, I'm going to guess, a decade, you know, just given where things are in the economy, you know, are going to be tighter than they've been for the last decade. And that's not, you know, newsflash. It's just that's what it is. So if we don't really get our act together on this, and you can tell I still think of myself very federally, if we don't get our act together on this and use all of the right resources and team properly to get this done, we're going to lose another decade like we did back with those cuts in the late 80s, early 90s. And again, some agencies are still trying to recover from knowledge gaps from that. And we just can't let that continue. We've got to really look at this differently and approach it from how do we justify, how do we measure, how do we defend that training budget?
You mentioned the breadth that DOD takes when they're looking at the costs mm-hmm. of someone. There's also a depth there, too, because from what I understand, they don't just look at this person as a private. He or she will cost us this much in pay and benefits and this much in training and this much and so on and so forth. They're also looking down the road with that person,
correct,
from what I understand.
Yes.
In 2 years, that person will become this if that person stays on track, and then it will cost us this
right.
much and so on and
right.
so on.
Yeah, they do have – they look long-term, and they look at – given how long that person may be active military, the normal studies they have, they associate different costs with their different ranks, their different roles and responsibilities. And certainly we can do that on the civilian side. Most people are in some kind of a career ladder, in some kind of an occupational area, where we know that they're going to be, quote-unquote, automatically progressing. And so what are the training implications and costs there? We can certainly build that in. What are the normal promotion patterns? How long is somebody a non-supervisor before they may be considered, you know, able to be a viable candidate for supervisory jobs? How many people move into those chains? How many people stay in the technical fields? We have all that data, and we can look back for workforce trends and do that same thing. But we have to start doing it, and mm-hmm. we just haven't.
There are things that you're getting to there that I want to dig into when we come back from the break that don't necessarily sound like what I would associate with the typical HR person's responsibility, but this sounds like almost the kind of data that you'd feed into an actuarial table.
Just about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that
sure.
when we come back from
okay.
the break and how we're using some of that data. My guest is Linda Peterson with the Graduate School USA and a veteran of the federal government. You can read more about what she's writing about salvaging training in a tight budget environment later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And my conversation with Linda continues in just a moment.
Informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Time is running out. Congress has until September 30th to pass agency spending bills for 2013. What's the latest on your agency's funding? How much will your budget be cut? And how will sequestration play a role? FederalNewsRadio.com's budget tracker has the latest on the 12 annual appropriations bills. Follow your agency's funding as it makes its way through the House and Senate and to President Obama's desk. Find the budget tracker online at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search budget tracker.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Steve Shee, Deputy Associate Director for Executive Resources and Employee Development at the Office of Personnel Management, receiving a 2012 COSI Award.
With a new standard SES performance appraisal system across the federal government, there is basically a common framework to evaluate and communicate performance requirements on all SES members, and that will foster the ability for that executive to then cross into another agency.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA is my guest in the program today. And I've mentioned this piece a couple of times that you've written, Linda, and it's called Salvaging Training in a Tight Budget Environment. And you wrap it up with steps to save, and then you write, hopefully grow. And I love your positive attitude, especially given what we keep hearing about budgets and sequestration and all that junk. To save and grow training budgets, the first step that you write about is to set and obtain leadership buy-in for strategic training objectives. Sometimes that might require the difficult job of going up the ladder, maybe even two or three steps above where you normally would
go. Absolutely. I think it's imperative for training folks and HR officials to work together with agency managers, the line managers who are obviously there to get the jobs done, to come up with strategic objectives. Let's look. Every agency has to have a strategic plan. What's in there? What's going to be going on for that agency? What training is going to help get people there? You know, we know we've got some skills gaps. We know we've got some knowledge gaps on the technical side. What about all those non-technical soft skill things we've been talking about that really aren't that soft, but to me are so important for success? How do those link in? So if HR and training and management can work together to talk about, here's some solutions, here's some ways we can go forward, and link those directly to the strategic objectives, they've got something to talk to management about. Management doesn't put those pieces of paper out there just for the heck of it. They're committed to seeing those things happen over time. So why not then tie in how you're going to get from where you are today with your workforce and your sense of accomplishments to where you're going to be in 5 years with your training solutions? What's that path you have to carry out? And no training official, no HR person by themselves can do this. It's got to be a team of HR, training, and management.
The second on your list of steps is to gather and maintain data for building the ROI case to minimize training fund cuts. And we've talked about the ROI thing. Right. In the last segment, you mentioned the amount of data that agencies can collect, and,
yes,
and I talked about the fact that this is becoming a situation almost like an insurance company where you have actuarial tables.
That's
there's
right.
So much information available that I guess some agencies are starting to wonder, do we have too much to try to sift
exactly.
through?
Exactly, and that's part of the problem. That's why, again, it's got to be strategic. How do you best measure your success for today and for tomorrow? Where do you want to be when you grow up? And what are those things you need to look at? And then shift out some of that data, because we have a myriad of things that we can look at, and sometimes we get too bogged down in some of those statistics. But we also often miss, because, again, some of these softer skills have those intangibles to them. So a good starting point if an agency doesn't have the good data, in my view, are surveys or focus groups with employees and with managers who've gone through training, who've had a training intervention of whatever kind, through whatever kind of technology it may be, and say, all right, how have you applied this? Where have you seen success? Hey, manager, has it been better in dealing with your customers? Has it been cheaper to do this? Have your priorities been all in sync in the whole organization? Because people understand better what is and is not priority and how to manage their time to get the top priority done, et cetera, whatever that training intervention might have been. To get that through focus group information, to get that through survey data, as opposed to, did you like the training experience? And that we do too much of that nice, feely stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really looking at, how did it make a difference? Or looking, taking it backwards. Hey, here's a success you had, organization. Let's link back as to why. Let's explore why you had that success. And unless all of my 36 years of experience has been worthless, but I don't think it has, you're going to find some training interventions in the course of that that you could say, aha, people learn to do things differently. They saw something different. And again, it doesn't have to be classroom training. We'll get to that in a second with that last point. But you can start to gather that data and build the kind of data that really shows your path to success. So if you don't have 5 of these and 7 of these and 20 of these to look at, you can certainly do survey methodologies and focus groups to look at, again, either successes and track back or to get that individual employees and managers' perceptions as to why and how things are better after that kind of training intervention.
Training intervention sounds like it would make a great reality show on cable TV. That's a great title for that. All right, the third one on your list, Linda, is broaden training methods and sources, and I imagine technology is enabling this.
Absolutely.
In a way that you wouldn't have imagined a short time ago.
It's mind-boggling, the kinds of things that agencies can do. And a lot of the agency's internal IT policies have loosened so that some of these are more available, too. But there's all kinds of virtual classrooms that are now available. There's all kinds of vendors that provide them. There's some internal IT shops that do them. Many, many, many agencies have online learning centers of various names and sorts. Certainly OPM provides some of them. The Chief Human Capital Officers Council sponsors and does some of them. Vendors like the Graduate School USA provide a number of those kinds of forums with virtual classrooms, with different webinars and different connections over the web.
I'm starting to hear anecdotal stories, though, not in great mass yet, but with technology enabling agencies to do just all kinds of just ad hoc, off the cuff.
Absolutely.
I figured out how to do something that I know 30 other people in my organization need to know how to do, so I take my iPhone and I shoot a video and post it on YouTube, and that's training, technically.
Absolutely, and it is. And my view is we also aren't looking broadly enough on how we're defining training, you know, on-the-job training, the kind of thing you just described where an employee gets a great idea, wants to share it. We need to capture those because that is training. Why not capture that? Why not say, you know, that example might have cost the agency, you know, $100, and yet 30 people that learn a new technique, a new process, let's capture that and show how valuable it is and then promote more of that. What about more employees with more great ideas? How do you do that? How do you package all those together to get the best practices, the best of the best? And you could do that easily with today's technology of all different sorts. Online meetings, so we can, you know, get away from some of the, you know, crazy things we do with training time that's not as effective and efficient as we need it to be. So we can start to capture that. Again, we can describe and define on the job training. We can do it for remote locations. The more people telework, the more we need to open the doors to that anyway. Let's take advantage of what technology gives us today. And, you know, heaven knows tomorrow could be a matter of, you know, you speak and 30,000 people hear you and they can all ask you questions. How wonderful. Those are the things that are coming, and we need to factor that into our thinking to be as efficient as we can with training dollars that certainly aren't going to be flowing freely, let's put it that way.
Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA is my guest. We'll wrap up our conversation about training budgets and how to save yours in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Hi, this is Glenn Close. Have you ever cut off ties with a friend because she had cancer? Or were frightened by a person with diabetes because you assumed he was violent? Welcome to the world of mental illness.
For the 1 in 4 Americans with a mental illness, the stigma and discrimination they face can be as painful as the disease itself.
Say what you need to say. Change your mind about mental illness and you can change a life at bringchangetomind.org.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Are you a skilled IT professional looking to be called by your first name instead of your employee number? If so, Preferred Systems Solutions is calling your name. Since 1991, PSS has offered customers and employees the attention of a small business while delivering capabilities of a large enterprise. With contracts across the DoD, civilian, and intelligence communities, PSS offers opportunities in ERP, intelligence, IT, and program management. PSS offers a dynamic workplace, competitive compensation, and best-in-class benefits. To join their team, visit PSSFed.com and click Career.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We just have a minute or so left with my guest Linda Peterson of Graduate School USA. If we had to boil down the conversation that we've had into just a couple of thoughts that you want to leave with somebody about trying to preserve their training budget, what would those thoughts be?
Number one is, if you haven't already started trying to look at return on investment and look at the right measures and look at the links to the strategic plan, do it now, because the time is going quickly. Now, we're already talking about the 2014 budgets. Before you turn around, it's 2015 and so on. We'll lose the whole decade. You've really got to start, and it's, again, not just one person, but getting together with, you know, interagency functional groups, with HR, and if you're not already part of HR, if you're in training, with the managers, and pointing out just how important this is. Most managers recognize it. They know they're better trained people, have these kinds of skills. You just have to bring it to their attention that the more you work together, it's going to be a reality for better success.
What a pleasure it's been to have you here today, Linda.
I enjoyed it so much, Francis. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in today. We'll put your piece, as I mentioned, on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's called Salvaging Training in a Tight Budget Environment. It's a great read, and I commend it to you if this is an area that you would like some best practices in. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose, coming soon on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And my conversation with Linda will be posted on the In-Depth page at federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon.